to the Non-Breaking Space Show from Austin, Texas. I'm the Internet's Christopher Schmidt. And on today's show, we welcome Laura Hogan. Laura is the author of the great book, Demystifying Public Speaking, published by A Book Apart. Before we get started, some things I'd like you to know. Make plans for CSS DevConf 2017 in New Orleans. Grab your tickets now and learn from Chris Coyer, Wes Boss, Mina Markham, Harry Roberts, Estelle Weil, and many, many more this October. Tickets are on sale at cssdevconf.com. The UX Design Newsletter is a weekly list of articles, tutorials, and inspiration handpicked by yours truly. Sign up at uxdesignnewsletter.com and have the best links of the week sent to your email. Speaking of email, set it and forget it with the Non-Breaking Space Show newsletter. So whenever there's a new show, it gets sent straight to your inbox. Sign up at newsletter.nonbreakingspace.tv. And of course, find show notes and links discussed today's episode at nonbreakingspace.tv. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at Telejct, T-E-L-E-J-E-C-T. As always, thank you for telling others about Non-Breaking Space. And now, on with the show. But so thank you for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, this is great. I just want to say, like, your book, Book Apart does a lot of great books. Your book was the one I felt like just blew me away by how much information is on this one topic. And such a short book, because the book parts are usually like kind of short, breezy books sometimes. I think Zeldman actually talked about them being breezy, that you read them on an airplane trip. People always give advice in blog posts about what it takes to be a really great speaker. And it's usually like within 12 bullet points. And that doesn't give you the whole experience of being a public speaker. And as someone who speaks at events, who actually runs events, I could tell you, that's not... 12 bullet points isn't going to cover a lot of what you're doing. So I really appreciate the book. And so how did you, and public speaking isn't like, the thing that you're like, you're also known for performance, also known for, I think, managing teams and doing all that stuff. So why, and I guess how you get started on a book about public speaking?
Totally. Yeah. It's funny thinking about public speaking. I feel like what's out there most are like rules, rules of thumb. You shouldn't say or you shouldn't read from your notes. Like there's lists of rules out there about public speaking. And I never really grokked why people share them so frequently. I think it's because rules help us feel safe and it gives like a rubric to, it's almost like its own sense of control, right? Rules help us feel in control of things. And I just found that those rules didn't make any sense most of the time for a variety of reasons. Everybody is so different. And that means that everybody brings different fears and different strengths to something like public speaking. What makes one speaker nervous could make another speaker feel really relaxed. Like, I love doing Q&A.
Right.
There are so many speakers who Q&A is just the worst possible thing, worst possible part of giving a talk.
Right.
I like really not being able to see faces in the audience. I prefer like a big sea of blank faces you can't actually make eye contact with. Some other speakers find that terrifying, it feels like a vast sea of overwhelming uncertainty, So everybody is different, which is why when I was reading, how to be a good public speaker, tips on public speaking, I found that it was a really mix of things that do and don't work well for any one individual. And so I thought maybe I can provide something that gives people permission to think about what their own strengths are and what their fears are and have some options and ways to navigate public speaking and getting on stage and decompressing after being on stage. That my goal was kind of like to break down this idea that there are rules and instead offer like a it's like a choose your own adventure, you know, of getting prepared to get up on stage. Even if it's not a physical stage, I really wanted to write something that was applicable to anybody who had to say some prepared words in a moment, whether it's like a physical spotlight or just like a, you feel a spotlight. And I also really wanted to write something that included advice for people who are members of underrepresented groups in tech. Because I think that a lot of the advice that's out there works really well for people with privilege, people who are white, people who are men. And I wanted to make sure that I wrote something that was well-rounded and included advice that would work for people with privilege and also people who are marginalized in some way, things to help keep them safe. There's a whole subset of fears out there that have to do with being a member of an underrepresented group in tech. So I wanted to make sure I covered that stuff as well.
Right. Cool. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And you know, like, you cover like codes of conduct in there as well too. And it's so great that I think Q&As are just an awesome thing, and not many people can handle them very well. Cause it's, you know, you come out there with a prepared presentation, right? And so that's your safety net, right? That's like, and even getting to a safety net, you know, takes work and time, which we'll probably cover, you know, later on, but Q&As are really awesome. Because even, I remember watching C-SPAN a long time ago because I'm that boring, but like there's C-SPAN, like people, like elected officials won't go on C-SPAN, which is just like a call-in talk show where like people from all over just call and like ask, you know, a wide range of questions from smart to stupid. And elected officials just don't want to take that because they're afraid of saying something stupid. And that's like totally good. But like, well, you're a politician. But anyway, but even then, like that's a great fear. And so, I want to talk about the Q&As a little bit too, because like, kind of put the cart before the horse a little bit, but it's just like, because you get some great tips on how to handle Q&As, and one thing you mentioned in the book was like the powerful breakthrough that you had was like just learning to say I don't know.
Oh, totally, and it helps. I mean, knowing how to say I don't know in like a not heavy and not sad way. It helps you not just when you're giving a talk, but like you never want to be that leader. You never want to be that staff engineer. You never want to be that person who's like, tries to make something up on the spot or tries to fake it when they're, you know, it's like you, it's really powerful to know how to say, I don't know, in like a clear and understandable way. So I definitely, in the book, I address like different ways you could navigate that range from straight up saying that you don't know, but you can look it up later and you'll tweet about the answer later. Or just one of my favorite things in like a conference or event setting is to straight up ask the audience.
Oh yeah.
Hey, does anybody else in the audience know this answer? Cool. Go talk to that person later.
Yeah, that's a great way of doing it. Cause like, yeah, that's one of the things I love doing is like saying you don't know, but then finding someone in the audience. And then maybe even like just what you don't know, what you don't want to happen is in like the next 5 minutes of them talking while you're on stage.
Right, I definitely tried to cover some of that stuff too, because I think that we've all been in the audience when, you know, someone raises their hand and says, this is more of a statement than a question, you know, which is just the worst. And so I think that everybody in the audience knows who that person is. Right. And you as a speaker still, you know, you're still in charge of making sure that people walk away learning something. So even if you have to gracefully get them to stop talking, there are ways to do that. And there are ways to make sure that the audience still can learn something and cause you're in control of your ability to like communicate to them about that topic.
Right. Cool. Yeah. So I guess now we should go back to starting a presentation. So now that we've talked about the ending of Q&As, but so why would, is it just something about our industry that people like why would someone need to feel the need to present a topic? Because that's one of the big fears. Like I remember seeing a list of like, oh, here's the biggest fears people face, you know, buying a home, moving.
Right.
And then like public speaking is in the list. I'm like, well,
public speaking is number one more than like spiders or death. Yeah. There was a study on American fears and that, it's terrifying. Yeah. So why do people do it? It's funny. I've talked to a lot of people about, not just why they do it, but why they don't do it. And I think that there's obviously a range of answers to both those questions. When I talk about this stuff, I want to make sure that I underscore that public speaking shouldn't need to be for everybody. It's not a thing that I think is crucial for every human to try out. I kind of view sharing information, you can speak about it, mm-hmm. you can try to open source it, and you can write about it. Those are three huge ways that you can do it. There's different risks and different fears associated with each of those. And depending upon who you are, mm-hmm. you may gravitate towards one or more of those. But in terms of like why you would choose speaking, I've seen it be really useful to people who want to like get some practice conquering their fears, yeah. certainly. But also, you know, there's plenty of like really valid career reasons. Speaking for me got me both the last job I have and the next job that I'll have. And I think it's been really important as part of like shaping your career and being known for a topic and being able to talk about that topic and iterate on how you talk about that topic. Public speaking helps you do all those things.
I think also just speaking, you know, one, I think it's part of our industry is just to share knowledge. And yeah. you know, I don't have a vast, you know, insight into other industries as to well, but like, you know, we go to other conferences, like the way our industry shares knowledge from meetups mm-hmm. to, you know, just online to open source. It's so fascinating that there, totally. But we still need to, but even other industries have conferences and they still need to talk to people, you know, in hallways in between conferences and some of that. And also, I feel like our industry moves so fast mm-hmm. that, you know, writing books, and even though, like, you've published books, I published books, you know, it's they get outdated so fast. Yeah. So going to a conference is just, and learning from the perspective of, you know, just not reading blog posts, which is, you know, a fast way of gathering information, but being able to talk to a person like, I just read your blog post, I just heard you speak, I still have some questions. You know, that's just mm-hmm. amazing. So that's just one of our ways our industry just learns. And keeps up the, you know, because with the state of how things changes so fast. So
Totally.
Yeah. So because when I first started out, I was like, well, how do I, you know, it's not like, how do I show others that I know what I'm talking about? It's like, mm-hmm. it's like, well, I can write a book because that's what like, you know, David Siegel and Linda Wyman did. So that's how they, and then I could just, you know, and I can go to conferences and show and share what I know. So that's.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It's cool. But yeah, so I definitely think there is some. You know, good reasons to go speak, you know, definitely for that networking and finding the jobs mm-hmm. too. So I think that's also a great thing. But again, it's not for everyone. You know, if you don't need right. to, you know, if you'd rather like kill a spider instead, you know, conquer those fears that way.
Yeah, totally. And I think there should be a spectrum of ways to kind of move your career forward. And public speaking is just one of the options you have.
Yeah. And that's another thing about your book that I love so much is like you actually went from like, explaining like how to develop a talk and to actually like what you should do to the day of. But, and so one of the things I liked about it was that you said like shaping a talk becomes mm-hmm. an everyday process.
Totally.
And then, so can you just talk a little bit about like how you shape your own, your talks?
Yeah. So, I do it a lot, usually with conversations with people who I know and trust who either know something about the audience I'm going to be speaking to or about the topic itself to kind of help me workshop. These conversations can help me workshop my point of view on it or like which words communicate most effectively what it is that I'm trying to say, or it helps to poke holes in the thing that I thought was true, which is really valuable. You want to do that before you actually get up on stage. Yeah. So for me, it's often conversations with individuals, but also I really enjoy like tweeting about the topic I want to write about or speak about rather. And I also like to write blog posts and see what it is that people respond to most. Cause I think that that's a great method of figuring out what people don't understand, what people have questions about, what people really responded to. Often after I've given a talk the first time, I'll go and look through Twitter about, you know, who quoted which parts of my talk to see what resonated the most with people. When I was first talking about performance, I was really focused on how to, you know, tactically accomplish a bunch of speed ups on your website. And afterwards, during Q&A, I would always get questions about how you got your company to care about this stuff. And I realized there was this huge chunk of information that I was never covering, but was super valuable to people. And I only learned that by doing a bunch of talks and paying attention during Q&A to the kinds of things that people gravitated towards, which, you know, eventually shaped the talk that I gave and eventually shaped the book that I wrote.
Oh, wow. Cool. Yeah. So it's sort of like just doing analytics on your.
Yeah. It's just data gathering.
Yeah. Data gathering. Yeah. So that's such a smart thing to do. So yeah, that's pretty great. Yeah. So that's good. You know, that's one of the things like as a conference organizer, you know, people always ask like, how can I speak at your conferences or XYZ? And it's very hard. To help with that, like that's a great way of doing it is to figure out what people are interested right now. But one story I always talk about is Rachel Neighbors, who I didn't know Rachel Neighbors who's now, you know, a respected animation expert. You know, she spoke for the first time that I know of at our CSS Dev conference that we did. And she just gave a talk proposal, and we did like a double blind voting. And we still do it. And her proposal was like, she said like, yeah, I put the proposal in because it's kind of advanced and I didn't do any research on it, and it would take me like months to figure it out. So if it got picked, if it did get picked, I wouldn't care because I didn't, you know, wouldn't have to worry about it, but it did get picked. So she's like, oh, wow. So she, it's sort of like, in a way, she saw what the industry was going to need. And then when it got picked, she's like, oh man, I can actually do it. And it turned out to be a great talk. And, you know, we had Tab Atkins, who's from Google, who writes specs with, funding from Google as part of his day job. And so he was there, and he was asking questions about the spec. And it was just a great way it was a great win-win for everyone there. So
So
you don't need data gathering, like you said, I think that's a way easier. I think that's more of a modern way of finding out how to do it. And also, I think writing blog posts in general, as a speaker, like as a conference organizer, it's a great thing. Because another story I always tell is that I find speakers who blog. You know, if you don't blog, then I don't know you exist, pretty much. So I have other ways of finding, researching and stuff like that, but from talking to other conference organizers, I think I do a lot more research into finding speakers than other conference organizers do. And so that's just me just saying how awesome I am. I feel like when I talk to other conference organizers, they look at other conferences and stuff like that, but they don't really, you know, they're not researching a lot of the blog posts that are coming out and keeping up to date, because it is a lot of information to keep up to date because our industry changes so much. So fast. So definitely I would say I think in general it just helps your career. Even if you don't speak, just write blog posts. Definitely like that. So yeah. Cool. But I love the idea of data gathering. I think it's so awesome.
I mean, a lot of the fears that people have are about getting up on stage and realizing halfway through that you don't know what you're talking about, or that, you know, somebody in the audience knows more than you do about your topic and you're wrong.
Right.
And you can totally avoid that by doing some data gathering ahead of time.
Right. Exactly. Or the worst thing is to give a talk and then you realize that your browsers have changed like the day before. And so everything you talked about is kind of like, you know,
moot.
Toast.
Terrifying.
Yeah, that may have happened to me. But I also like the fact that it seems like talks don't happen in a vacuum, right? And so like you know, one of the things you talk about is when you come up with an idea, write it. Now, even if you don't write up into a blog post, like you share it with share it with your friends.
Yeah,
as a way of helping validate the ideas. And so
totally.
So yeah. But yeah, so I think that's kind of a fear that people get to, is like, oh, I'm all alone.
Right.
And coming up with this idea and fleshing it out.
Yeah. I mean, that's patently false. Like you are already surrounded by a network of people who are eager to help and support you, even if it's just your coworkers, even if it's just your partner, you know, like there are people who are going to want to give you feedback. The trick is making sure that you equip them with enough good information about like what feedback looks like that's good to actually get something valuable out of that conversation.
And then you also have a great talk, a great part of the book about find the right venues to speak at.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. It's so tricky, right? Like there's no public speaking. There's no way to like dip your toe in slowly. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just like, you're either in that spotlight talking or you're not. In the book, I covered a lot about like what it looks like to ask local companies in your area if they've got like a brown bag lunch or an educational lunch program that you can come and speak at, or local meetups are also a great way to kind of like get some practice feeling what that feels like.
Right. Yeah, I think Austin, Texas, where I'm from, just is blessed with so many meetups. Mm-hmm. And I know that's not the case because, like, I lived in other places like Cincinnati. They plan meetups now, probably, but they weren't web friendly. Because it was like back in the time when Flash was still a thing. And Procter & Gamble owns pretty much Cincinnati. Procter & Gamble makes tons of products and brands, and so Flash is brand friendly.
Yeah.
So there wasn't many friendly places to go speak. But yeah, so I like the idea of asking local companies, you know, to do a brown bag. So lunch, and then try and investigate and do the Google searches and stuff like that to find out. And so actually, you know, back when I was in Cincinnati, I found a meetup that was an hour away from town and in Dayton, Ohio. And so I would actually went there and spoke at their meetup. One of the things I think I've learned very fast as a speaker was that, you know, you have to be very professional about what you do. Like, so if you say you're going to speak, just show up and be prepared to speak, you know,
matter
what. Cause like when I say I spoke at Dayton, Ohio, that sounds a lot better than the Panera Bread room that I actually spoke at. Right. So with this projector, that was 800x400 resolution. So I was like, oh, this is probably not the best place to show a page that's 900 to 1200 pixels wide on this projector. So,
but, I mean, it's great experience, that stuff. I some of my favorite experiences are places that are like ill-equipped to have, cause it like, it teaches you how to like recover from technical foibles. And, you know, it's just, I once spoke at, a small public library in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And it was one of my favorite experiences because, like, you know, you really had to like make it work in a place that was not, you know, a large conference venue. And it was kind of fun, you know?
Right. Yeah. So did you just have like major snafus there?
Yeah. Or? And just like, you know, I realized that having backup plans was a really smart idea in case your Mac laptop wasn't able to be connected to the projector, you know, it's like all that stuff. And, yeah, it's funny. I think that a lot of like my early days of speaking in smaller venues or places that just, you know, don't have a lot of practice doing this stuff has reduced my fears so much about getting up on stage because I know that I can recover if something strange goes wrong, even if it's technical.
Right. And you see like recover like it's the end of the world, which is not like if you may feel like that, like there's a 10,000 spiders coming at you. But no. But I feel like we do, you know, online conferences as well as in-person conferences. And so I just feel like there's a lot more forgiveness, if you will. And it's not even forgiveness. It's just like people totally understand when things break down in person than they do online. Because online, they're waiting for things to happen, like bits and, you know, ones and zeros across the screen. If the mic's not working, they can't see you or hear you or whatever. But if the mic's not on in person, they can totally see that you're there and you're... things are being trying to be worked on. So
I was recently attending an event in which Cory Doctorow interviewed Edward Snowden over Skype at the New York Public Library. Mm-hmm. And there were so many technical difficulties and the whole audience was like so forgiving and so entertaining to watch Edward Snowden give basically remote tech support to okay, the mute button is up on the yes, but the red button up there. It was incredible. Oh man. That's awesome. Celebrities, they're just like us.
Oh man. But yeah, so like it just as if you want to speak and you want to get really good practice, just realize that, you know, sometimes you're just gonna have a room and that's about it. And so you might have a mic. You might have a projector, but I think that just makes it so much easier. So like I know some speakers, you know, back in the day when CD-ROMs were a thing, you know, that we have thumb drives now, but he would not take his laptop with him for he would just make sure that he would burn his presentation to a CD or may have backups on another CD, but so that he wouldn't fidget with his slides up to the last minute. And and also the fact that his computer might crash, whatever, so he made sure like he had his, you know, the... But on the flip side, like I'm pretty sure he also made arrangements to have someone else's laptop on the stage as well. But also, if you do something like that as a conference organizer, this has happened to me. Someone showed up with just a thumb drive. And so I was just like, and where's your computer? Like, oh, I didn't bring one. I'm like, okay.
Whoa.
Did you tell me about this before? And So if you have any technical issues or concerns, please let the person running the event up front.
Totally. And like, I find that the best conference organizers are the ones that let you know exactly what the setup is going to be like beforehand, as in like way in advance, you know, what the, if there are pictures of the venue and what the setup looks like beforehand, that's even better.
Right. So do you feel like that's really good? Or is like how often do people do that? Like in events that you do?
You know, it really depends on the event. Some events definitely so an event apart events are so well run. Mm-hmm. I can't think of an event that I've spoken at. Maybe Webstock was the only other one that was like as professionally well run. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they really have their act together. But in terms of just like giving, like letting you know what's expected of you, letting you know, and not just like on the day of, but also, you know, when's the happy hour and how much time should you be spending with attendees and, right. you know, where's your table going to be at lunch? You know, it's all that stuff that it really helps equip speakers to do their best on the day of, because it reduces a lot of the uncertainty, I think.
Okay. Yeah, it's cool. I'm taking notes as a conference organizer right now. It's like, I need to be better at this. But yeah, so do you have any, I guess, words of wisdom in general that you would, you know, if someone's listening right now and they're like, they want to speak, other than buying your book, which I think your book is great. I think there's some pros that are professional speakers that need to read your book. So that are out there. I think you read the book, I think you'd be like, you're going to be one step up on the competition in terms of how to deliver a great presentation. So
I think it was Leah Veru who once wrote about, what technical depth to give in your talk. And she wrote really well about, don't worry about dumbing it down too much, because if people walk in and they don't understand what it is that you're talking about, typically they'll blame themselves. Right. But if it seems too below you, they'll blame the speaker. And I tried to approach the book in the same way. I tried to really write it so that people who are completely new to this would definitely learn a bunch of stuff. But people who are seasoned at this, I'm hoping, still learned a bunch of random new things to either try out or experiment with, or just to like level up their own speaking game. Not because it's a collection really of all the stuff that I've learned, not because I invented it myself, because I'm not that smart. It's more like I've talked to enough speakers out there and learned so much from them. I try to channel all of that into like a, what's hopefully a helpful book to everybody.
Great. Yeah. But yeah, like I said, I try to say this book will make you a pro at public speaking than a lot of people who are professional speakers out there. So I think it's a really great book.
Well, thank you.
Cool. Thank you for being on the show. How can people find you internet and buy the book?
Yeah. Buy the book on abookapart.com. Mm-hmm. And you can find me on the internet at Lara_Hogan on Twitter.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of the day to be with us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Cool. Awesome.